Some of you might remember Dave the ex-slave, also used to be known as Truth Juice Dave. He does talks on mind manipulation through the media and the spiritual war on humanity. I have seen his talk once before. He'd got a lot of new material in there. It still was basically a matter of quite a lot of titties and knobs, but there was a lot of other things in there as well. But those of you who know Dave will know that he's also quite a keen researcher, and he's a researcher in areas that many of us don't look. He does seem to know a fair bit of stuff that that the rest of us haven't stumbled across. And I did actually get the chance to have a chat with him before his talk, although I didn't get time to catch up with him afterwards. And that's what I'm going to move on to next. We're going to have a wee tour of the suspicious mind of Truth Juice Dave, or Dave the ex-slave, in which we talk about a little bit about the car tax, because Dave thinks he's found a few things on the forms that might be worth knowing. He hasn't had a chance to experiment with it yet, but as he says, he's going to. I quite fancy a go at the things that he's doing as well. Wouldn't mind having a bit of a jalopy, so that just in case you do lose it, it doesn't really matter very much. Mind you, although the van's in pretty shocking condition, it does still actually work and get us about the place. So we'd probably have to do it with something else, but it's interesting material. He's also still having a go with the council tax. I think most interesting of all is the stuff that he starts off with. He's been looking into private members' bills that are currently travelling through the Houses of Parliament, the House of Lies, and he's come across a few real shockers. In fact, they were so shocking that as soon as I got home, I logged myself on and I found a few things to look at as well. Some things, in fact, that are even more disturbing than the ones that Dave chooses to concentrate on. But that's what's up next is, three quarters of an hour or so of chat that I had with Dave the ex-slave. And he is still definitely an ex-slave, getting more so, really, as time goes by. So here we come, a little bit of an ex-TNS host for you. Plenty of ex-TNS hosts, so here we go. Back with you shortly, folks. So here we are, live at the Truth Juice Gathering, and the biggest luxury of the show so far, I've actually got the Truth Juice Dave in the caravan with me to have a quick chat with Dr. Rock, catch up on what you've been doing, because I ain't seen yet. For ages, Dave. Welcome, matey, back to the Dr. Rock Show.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. I am rather humbled to be here as a speaker.
Looking forward to it, mate.
Yeah, on the same stage and venue as Santos Bonacci. What a guy. It was a nightmare getting down here.
It's a long way from Liverpool.
I've never come down this neck of the woods again on a bank holiday, surely. That's a set. But then again, August bank holiday will not be the same anymore after this year, sadly.
No. Tell them about it, Dave.
Well, I've been watching the Parliament website and looking at the bills that have had the first reading and maybe second readings up to now. And there are a number of bills which you need to be aware of, which are going to probably affect your lives. And I'm going to start off with the first one that I've come across. And there are a number of them that you've got to be aware of. And the first one that I come across was the bank holiday bill, which has had its second reading. And this looks like, if it goes through the House of Lords and all that, August bank holiday is now to be renamed Margaret Thatcher Day.
Yay, let her be singing and dancing.
Oh, we'll
have
jellies and ice cream and be able to celebrate it in the true spirit of Christmas and forget Christ, it's going to be Thatcher in future. Yeah, and we'll have the Christmas Day in the summer. What a wonderful thing, yeah. So that started me on a journey which into Parliament and bills going through. And they all tend to be private members' bills by the same people.
Yeah.
And there's four or five of them. And I'm particularly going to mention Peter Bone and Philip Hollowbone. Both of them, can I swear?
If you like, Dave, I'll put your money in the swear box.
Both of them look like slimy little shits. Do a Google on their images, you'll soon find out what I'm talking about. Right, so if they get their way, And it appears that they very well may do. A number of bills that are going to be changing all your lives. I'll run through them, shall I? Well, first of all, I'll start off with, at the present moment, in the United Kingdom, I better rephrase that. On the land, there's going to be 70 prisons built. Actually, they're getting built right now.
Really?
70 prisons. And the excuse for those prisons to be built is that for long-term prisoners to be relocated to a prison near to where they live so they can be rehabilitated, ready to go back into their local community.
Oh, that's really kind of them, Dave.
It is, yeah. 70 prisons. My God. That's a lot of prisoners. I don't know how many prisoners are in a prison. Yeah. But let's say there's 1,000, that's 70,000 people.
That's a huge earner as well, isn't it?
So are there 70,000 long-term prisoners?
I suspect that that's about what they've got, but off the top
I have no idea.
Sure.
I don't know the statistics. But that's saying if it's 1,000...
I didn't know that, I must admit.
If there's 1,000 inmates in a prison, that's going to be 70,000. But I don't know what the... I've not looked at that.
I'm actually in the process of reading a book called... I think it's called Prisons Revealed.
Mm.
And it's written by a guy who got locked up for the Cardiff newsagent murder and didn't actually do it. And it's his tale of what it was like in the various prisons he went to.
Mm.
And it is... basically, it looks like a complete litany of abuse. He approaches it in a really admirably balanced way, but... It's a pretty shocking system, and like I say, it makes shedloads of money.
I have to disagree with that, Nick.
Do you?
Jeffrey Archer had a lovely time when he was in prison.
Yes, indeed.
Driving around to the local pub in his BMW, as I remember, a weekend.
Some people are just sort of, some people are just more physically well suited to it, are they?
He was doing things to which give him extra privileges. But anyway, right, so that's the foundations of what made me go onto this Parliament website and look at bills going through Parliament right now. And we'll start off with the Margaret Thatcher Day Bill. And that's to do with the Finance Act, I think, of 2003, section whatever. Look it up yourselves. I started looking, what's this? And there's a bill for two bills going through right now for the BBC, the British Bullshit Corporation.
Oh, Babylon Broadcasting, my favourite.
Yeah. And the BBC licence fee is about to be decriminalised. A great thing, that. Wonderful thing. Because all the people are going to be getting, hey, we don't have to buy a TV licence anymore. Because it's been decriminalised. Now, do you think that's in an effect in Parliament responding to the free man stuff, saying stick your licence fee up your arse?
I think you're exactly right, because Pat and Laurie
on the
show I was listening to.
I would question that. I'll tell you why.
One of the things I think about it is that apparently there are a lot of people doing it now, and it's not just that they're, as soon as they've done that, they've stepped into a different position, and as a result they realise there's a different perspective on a whole lot of other matters. And it looked to me, because I was listening to a show about it, about Facebook pages, specifically aim is to discourage people from paying the licence. And it was quite clear to me that at the moment it is a massive portal into the rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody who's got a TV licence is a potential candidate for the trip, shall we
say. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So what do you think it's about?
I think it's a diversion.
It's always certainly one of them as
I think it's a diversion. Oh. And so then I look down the next one, because if you look at the bills going through Parliament, they are all alphabetically ordered. So the next one, BBC again. BBC to be privatised. A bill to privatise the BBC and to sell it off to shareholders, licence fee payers.
Isn't it a private corporation anyway?
Yes, it's owned by Consignia. Oh, no, not the BBC, no. The BBC is a trust. The TV licensing, was, when I last looked on Dun & Bradstreet, was owned by Consignia. And Consignia, I believe, is owned by Alistair Darling. There's an interesting character, but let's move on. So, come January next year, the three topics of conversation are going to be the BBC licence fee is decriminalised. The BBC is about to be privatised, and Margaret Thatcher Day we're all going to be celebrating. So they're the diversions. And maybe the few more diversions that are about to happen as we go through what's happening through Parliament right now. But I'll just go back two steps. So Margaret Thatcher Day, I went, whoa, and I started looking in to the Parliament website deeper and finding out that this is all private, these are all private members' bills.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's another link, private individual bills. I went, ooh, what's that?
I've never heard of them.
Ooh, what's that? Never heard of one of them, private individual. Click on it and bingo, it says, this is not verbatim, but this is basically what it says. Private individual bills are normally made by organisations or charities. You can make a private individual's bill if you want. And I thought, wow, great, I'll put a private individual bill in, right, to abolish Margaret Thatcher Day. Bitch. So, and then I looked deeper and deeper. And private individual bills, I'd say, normally put in by organisations or charities. And to start the ball rolling with a private individual's bill, you need to go through a parliamentary agent. A parliamentary agent is the only member of parliament that can charge for the fees for the services. Charge for the fees, charge for the services. So a parliamentary agent is a member of parliament who can charge for their services. And there's half a dozen of them. And guess what? They're all firms of solicitors. And they charge you millions upon millions of pounds to put a private individual's bill. No wonder they're only made by organisations and charities.
Yeah.
And the organisations and charities, are the bills that go through are only for their particular businesses. Like a railway company wants to build a line through property, they can put a private individual's bill, which then, I believe, this is my belief, this is conjecture by the way, this part, I believe that what's happening is private organisations are putting private individual bills going through a parliamentary agent and then materialising that parliament as a private member's bill. Mm-hmm. Now, as we know, I haven't looked into this, but I will, when I get back home, be looking into this. There is a website called the Company's House that we know, and there's a part of that website called due diligence. It means due dil, D-U-E-D-I-L. So all you researchers out there, go on there and start finding out what interests your MPs have and where their interests lie. I will be looking into Peter Bone and Peter Hollabone and all these private members who've put these bills before Parliament to see if they have anything to do with these parliamentary agents. Because as we know, most of the politicians are the lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Indeed.
And these parliamentary agents are firms of lawyers. Right, so let's move on. So, more bills going through Parliament. The age of voting is to be dropped to 16. Wow. Why do you think that is? Because the older generations won't bloody vote for anyone. They're losing voters, so they have to get them while they're young. Mm. Conscription is coming back.
Really?
You can't get a job, you're in the army.
Is that right?
Yeah, all right, it's all there. I think that's one of Peter Bones.
I look forward to looking into this myself.
Okay.
And what else? I've got to make sure you get your nap
right
before.
Well,
you
let's get to the meat of it, shall we? Right, okay.
Cut to the chase.
Let's get to real meat. The office of Deputy Prime Minister is to be abolished, and the duties to be passed around to other agencies. Not government, but agencies, and agencies are outside contractors. Your Serco, your G4S. So, what does the Deputy Prime Minister do? He argues with the Prime Minister and says, no, you can't do that.
Is that the idea, is it?
Right. But also, in the event of the incapacity of the Prime Minister, or the Prime Minister being out of the country, the Deputy Prime Minister steps in and runs the ship. Now, if the office of Deputy Prime Minister has been abolished, the agencies, the private corporations, are going to be the ones that step in the event of the incapacity of the Prime Minister, or...
I'd say the Prime Minister's pretty well incapacitated anyway.
Well, right. So, let's move on to the next one. A bill to appoint a new Prime Minister in the event of the death or incapacity of the existing Prime Minister. Not to elect, but a bill to appoint.
Really?
That is dictatorship. We're in a dictatorship anyway, but it's in-your-face dictatorship now. Right? So, let's say David Cameron becomes incapacitated after these bills have gone through. The Deputy Prime Minister steps in, which is a load of the agencies, which are private contractors, outside private contractors. The private contractors then decide on whether they want a new figurehead or not, or whether they'll just run the bloody ship themselves. What do you think will happen? That's fascist dictatorship, full stop. So you need to look into these things and all the rest of the things that are coming through. There's education stuff going through. There's ID stuff going through. There's just loads of stuff going through right now. And if these become law, this country is in for a rocky bloody ride. So anyway, let's move on, shall we, to something
yeah.
else.
Right. Yeah, so
let's move on to the car tax.
You've been doing a bit of work on the car tax.
Car tax,
the rest of the world crumbles around us, let's see if we can't...
Now, this I haven't been able to put into action yet. However, there are other things that I put into action, which I'll come on to a bit later on. If you have a look at your V62, get your V62 out, go to the post, download yourself a copy of the V62 and the V5 and the V10 from the internet.
Yeah. Right.
Your V62 is the change of registered keeper. Your V5 is the change of keeper, and the V10 is for payment of your road tax, whether you want 12 months, 6 months.
Welcome to the caravan. Yeah. We're just recording an interview, so... But it's alright, we like a bit of background noise.
Yeah. Right, so...
Just run through those forms again.
You've got the V62, which is the change of registered keeper.
Yeah.
You've got the V5, which is the change of keeper or owner. Not owner, keeper. And then you've got the V10, which is the application for the tax disc.
Right.
So the V62 is... for change of registered keeper and classification of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Right. The V52C is the little piece of paper on the logbook itself, which is change of keeper. You do not want to be the registered keeper. You want to be the keeper. Right?
Yeah.
There's a difference. If you're registered, you're liable. You're not in the private, you're in the public.
Yeah.
On the V62, it says, and I think it's section 2, box number 2, I think, it says, new registered keeper details. If you are an unregistered PLC or limited company, please provide the details of the new keeper.
That's what it says.
That's what it says. And we, as arseholes, put our names in there.
Can't say I've ever read it before.
Nobody ever reads it. No. That's right. Read it. It says if you are an unregistered PLC or limited corporation company, please provide the details of the new keeper in the box below. And then it says Mr., Mrs., Ms., so that part of the V62 is not for you or me, because we're not a registered, an unregistered company. Our person is an unregistered company, but we're not.
Yeah.
Right, so that's that. And then it says taxation class of vehicle. It'll have private stroke light goods, petrol car, diesel or other.
Right.
And we all put PLG, private light guts.
Yeah.
No. Private and or light guts. That's what that stroke means. And or.
Yeah.
So you can have a private and a light guts.
Yeah.
Or you can have a light guts. Or you can have a private.
Yeah.
So stroke out your light guts and put it in the private.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. That way, it's not a registered... You're not a registered keeper. Let's move on. That's it if you're applying for a logbook, by the way.
Yeah.
But do you want a logbook? I don't know. In a V52C, is your... that's your proof of equitable title to the vehicle.
Right.
That's it. Right? So yeah. You just keep that as your equitable title. You don't want to register to them bastards. So, let's move on to the Stamp Act. Forget what year. Look it up yourself. Anyway, if you read through the Stamp Act, it basically says, he who pays the stamp duty on a legal instrument is the beneficiary of that instrument.
Right.
I'm going to go back to the V62 again. To show you the differences between the V62 and the V10. The V62, when you look at it, there's the middle section that you fill in. On the left-hand side, there's a blued-out section. On the right-hand side, there's a blued-out section with lots of different characters and boxes for things. Like it'll say VC, which means vehicle classification, and a number of things. And it says DVLA use only. And in that greyed out, well, it's actually blued out box, there is a box that says DVLA stamp. That means it's the DVLA can only stamp that document, right, because they're the benefits of it. However, when you look at the V10, again, there is a white out section, not blued, it's white. And there's only one character thing in there, and it says above it, official use only, and then underneath that, it says date stamp.
Yeah.
You pay the stamp duty on it. You're the beneficiary of the legal instrument.
And you're an official?
Yeah. So I'm officially showing my sign of Nietzsche.
Yeah.
And putting my thumbprint
yeah.
as a stamp, because that's what a stamp is.
Yeah.
Thumbprint.
Yeah.
Or pay the stamp duty. Get yourself a first class stamp.
Stick it on.
Sign over it and date it. Right, and that makes you the benefits of the document, and because it's in the private and not like goods, my take on it is there ain't no duty to pay. But even if there was, you paid the stamp duty and become the benefits of the document.
So right? You owe yourself
and
the money
give yourself anyway. Either 6 months or 12 months, whatever freaking thing, yeah. whatever length of the tax you want, and then post that off to them. Now, I haven't done it yet, and the reason being is because I've not got my own car. I've got a lease car, which is coming to the end of its lease very soon. And when I get some money, I'm going to buy myself an old banger, and I'm going to do it for myself. My theory is you can't deregister a car. You can reclassify a car for the purposes of tax. And when you're in the private, you don't pay tax. Right, so that's that.
Yeah,
that
certainly sounds like it's worth
looking into.
Right, council tax.
Hey. Oh, yeah, indeed. We've all got problems with council tax.
Apart from those of us who are kind of peripatetic.
Yes, yes, our inhabitants.
Yeah.
Well, we've heard so much about the Local Government Act of 1680, whatever it was, or 1882, I can't quite remember. But they've had numbers of Local Government Acts since. Right, now, I got a liability order on me, and I thought, well, great. I got these letters saying I owe them money. There is a maximum law that states who does not have cannot give.
Yeah.
Right, so yeah. Get blood now. It's like getting blood out of a stone, as my dad used to say.
But possibly considerably more difficult.
Yes. So, I got these demands for £151 off the local council in my area. Oh, councils, oh, I could go far. If I've got time, I'll go through that. So, I thought, well, I'll wait until they issue the summons and I'll go to court and say, he who does not have cannot give, you cannot get blood out of a stone. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. And by the way, according to the Local Government Act of whatever year it was, Chapter 41, Section 79, Subsection 2, states that all duties and liabilities of the inhabitants of a county are now the duties and liabilities of the council of that county. And as I class myself as an inhabitant, not a bloody citizen, you don't want to be a Citizen Smith or a Citizen Kane. Or a person, right? you have usufruct right over the person. You have right of usufruct, right? And that's what it's for. It's for you to use, not to accept the duties and obligations of it. But anyway, so all this stuff, anyway, a week or two later, I got a letter, and I'm like, whoa, what's this? And it says, the Magistrates Court, on the 13th of June, issued a liability order for you. I went, hang on, where's my summons? Where's my bloody summons? I wanted to go to this for a laugh. Show them these shysters what they are. They are shysters, folks. Have a look at what the word shyster means in a legal dictionary. It's called malpractice, actually. It's judges that conduct misconduct and malpractice in a public office and malfeasance and all that. And they're all shysters, I'm telling you, especially the council courts. So it said the Magistrates Court have issued a liability order against you. Cough up or else.
Right? That good, sounds like a fair and clean and balanced judicial process to me.
That's basically what it said.
Yeah.
So I then thought, right, well, okay, I'm going to put a subject access request into the court. And I also want to put an N244 in, an application form to have the judgment set aside on the grounds that I wasn't invited or summoned to the hearing.
Yeah.
Right? Which is against the court rules. Right? It's against the CPR rules.
Yeah.
You have to have notification of the hearing so you can go there to defend yourself. Well, I never received
Or send it back.
Yeah, I never received any summons. Right?
Yeah.
So on those grounds, I wanted to have the thing over 10. So the same day as receiving this summons, I went down with a subject access request by hand and an N244 into the court, South Sefton Magistrates Court, and I went, there you go, bang. I said, is an N244 an application notice? Oh, that's right. A part of the form, it says, what level of judge do you require? And, and in the box, I actually put an honest one, if possible. That's one of them, isn't it? So, anyway, hand delivered it. And I also put a subject action request notice into the council, which I recorded delivered, right? Five or six days later, I got a letter from the Magistrates Court saying, we have no historical records, documents, or history of anything to do with council tax regarding you, blah, blah, blah. So they never issued a liability order. Which just goes to show, if those of you who don't know what's going on with council tax, is the council actually hire the court building. The Magistrates Court merely facilitate the hearing. In other words, the surroundings.
They supply the buildings to do you over it.
That's right, yeah. So, and it's all orchestrated by the magistrate, the council, right? And there's a document on the internet, if you want to have a look at it, Justices Clerk Society 2011 re-council tax hearings. You download it, you'll find it, if you want to find it properly, go straight to Let's Meet Up or We Are Change, Freedom Northwest Ashton Meet. It's there, and it just basically says that this is how honest they are. Basically says that there's been questions asked by MPs and the public about council tax hearings. And at no time should a member of the public be informed that the council run the whole process. That means it's not transparent. That means it doesn't adhere to the Bangalore principles of the Vienna Convention. Justice has to be not only be done, but be seen to be done. And the council's a judge, jury and executioner in this, and that's against all the judicial rules of the United Kingdom, the Great Britain and the United Kingdom. However, the United Kingdom has a constitution which is made up by different acts, statutes, common law and conventions and treaties, right? The Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, and so on and so forth, and all the Acts of Parliament, and of course, judicial decisions. Right now, that's the Constitution of the United Kingdom. It's not written, not in writing, but it's there with all these processes. Why does your local council have a constitution which only envisages within it the Human Rights Act Human Rights Act 1998?
Not the subsequent amendment.
Do you think it's so they can treat its citizens the way they bloody want without bringing in to their constitution any of the United Kingdom's constitution, the likes of the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights? I tell you it is, because when you go to these courts, they're nothing to do with the United Kingdom. They don't even have to follow their bloody rules. They don't follow the rules. They follow the constitution of local council. So they're telling you that you are their property. That's what's happening. And unless you start waking up and realising that you're not their bloody property, you will get screwed left, right and centre. Right, so let's go back to this letter, yeah. The latest letter I've written to them. Sefton Council has made an error in the application of law and is misleading myself by claiming that the above address is liable for council tax. You have now obtained a liability order against me. Sefton Council has orchestrated this liability hearing and not the magistrate's court. You've been claiming that my property is a dwelling as defined for the purpose of council tax under section 3 of the Local Government Finance Act 1992. Meaning of dwelling. This section has effect for determining what is a dwelling for the purposes of this part. Subject to the following provisions of this section, dwelling is any property which, by virtue of the definition of hereditament in section 115, subsection 1 of the General Rate Act 1967, would have been a hereditament for the purposes of that act if the act had remained in force. And B, it's not for the time being shown or required to be shown in a local or central non-domestic ratings list in force at that time. And is not for the time being exempt from local non-domestic rating for the purposes of Part 3 of the Local Government Finance Act of 1988. Please note that the Local Government Finance Act 1992, Section 3, brackets 2, A, B and C are defeated as follows. Clearly, one applies to a hereditament, not a domestic property. The required distinction can be found in the Local Government Act, Finance Act of 1988, as its definition is now established as being equal to the definition of the General Rates Act 1967. The above property is not a hereditament, which was not shown, nor required to be shown, on that domestic ratings list. Non-domestic ratings list. The above property is not and never has been liable to non-domestic rates. Council tax applies to non-domestic properties. The above property is a domestic property and is not liable to council tax. Note this and cease your attempts to obtain money that you are not entitled to. Now, I know there was a lot of...
They're not going to get any awards from the Plain English Society, are they?
No. So, I know there was a lot of gobbledygook there, but when you don't break it down, your home is not a non-domestic dwelling. It is a domestic dwelling. Right?
What was that word that you kept calling it?
Hereditament.
Yeah, what's one of them?
Look it up in a dictionary.
Okay.
Look it up in a dictionary. I'm not doing all your work for you.
Very much.
Because that means I'm getting power of attorney over you. And I'll start charging. Right, the way these bastards do. Right, okay. So, I urge you all to go onto the Vatican website now, while you're listening to this. Vatican website and look for the apostolic letter. There's been two issued over the last 6 weeks.
The what? The apostolic letter?
The apostolic letter.
Okay.
Issued by motu proprio of the Supreme Pontiff Francis, for the prevention and countering of money laundering, the financing of terrorism, and the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Now, this is the second letter that Pope Francis has released in the last 4 or 5 weeks. The first letter is very interesting when you look at it, right? A friend of mine actually rang the Vatican, right, and said, what does this all mean? And the guy said, well, I'm not an expert in canon law, but you're certainly going to find out very, very soon. So read it yourselves, folks. I haven't got that one with me. I've just bought the second one, which was only posted 2 days ago. Right, okay. The promotion of integral human development at the material and moral levels requires a profound reflection on the vocation of the economic and financial sectors, as well as on how they correspond with its ultimate aim of achieving the common good. For this reason, in conformity with its nature and mission, the Holy See, commercial See, folks, is participating in the efforts of the international community that aim to protect and promote integrity, permanence, and transparency of the economic and financial sectors, and to prevent and to counter illegal activities.
But that would bring the whole thing to a screaming halt, Dave.
Exactly. Pursuant to the steps already taken by my predecessor Benedict XVI in this area, with the motu proprio of the 30th December for 2010 for preventing and countering illegal activities in the area of monetary and financial dealings, I wish to renew the Holy See's commitment to adopting the principles and juridical instruments developed by the international community, bringing further into line with them the institutional structures for the prevention of countering money laundering, the financing of terrorism, and the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. With this apostolic letter in the form of motu proprio, I adopt the following measures. Article 1. The dicasteries of the Roman Curia and other institutions and entities dependent on the Holy See, as well as non-profit organisations that enjoy juridical personality in canon law and are based in Vatican City State, are bound to observe the laws of the Vatican City State with regard to measures for the prevention and countering of money laundering and the financing of terrorism, measures against those who threaten international peace and security, prudential supervision of entities habitually engaged in a professional financial activity. Article 2. The Financial Information Authority exercises the prudential role of the supervision and regulation of entities that are professionally engaged in the financial security. Don't forget what security is, folks. And the Human Rights Act and the Declaration of Human Rights and Freedoms. Everyone has the right to the security of the person.
What about this prudential supervision? I love that phrase, prudential supervision of entities habitually engaged in a professional financial activity.
Yes.
Well, what a sentence.
Well, I've got to say, that's not me, it's right. Article 3. The competent judicial bodies of the Vatican City State exercise jurisdiction in the above-mentioned issue, also with regard to the dicasteries of other entities and institutions dependent on the Holy See.
It sounds like some kind of coup.
As well as those non-profit organisations which have juridical personality in canon law and are based in the Vatican City State. Article 4. The Financial Security Committee is established with the purpose of coordinating the competent authorities of the Holy See and of Vatican City State for the prevention and countering of money laundering, the financing of terrorism, and the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Could that be the United States, the United Kingdom? Could that be whoever?
Well,
about every nation in the world.
What do you think they are intending with all of this?
Oh, Do you really want to know my
thoughts?
Well, hold on, let's finish
this. Okay, yeah.
It is disciplined by the statutes appended to this apostolic letter. I establish that this apostolic letter in the form of motu proprio be published in La Observatore Romano. I dispose that everything which has been established and establish have full and permanent value as from the 10th of August 2013, abrogating in addition any incompatible measures given in Rome at the Apostolic Palace on the 8th of August 2013, the first of the Pontificate Franciscus. PP! Where's that leading us? Now, what do you do? Well, if you read the first letter and then read that, it appears that the Vatican, or this Popeye, is cleaning out the corruption within the judicial system, within governments, within money system, within finance itself.
But there wouldn't be anything left.
Exactly.
Were he to succeed.
Exactly. Exactly. My opinion, I mean, I've thought this for quite a few years now, there's going to come a point very soon where, because that many people know how money's created, that many people know how much corruption there is within the judicial system, within government, the banking system, that many people start to know now that they realise the whole bloody thing's corrupt.
There's a book recently been published, I saw it reviewed the other day, called Death Grip.
Mortgage.
It's about all of that. It's about how the money's created and debt and everything. It's the whole shit.
Well, I think the Vatican have come to the point now, but this has been a planned route. It's been planned. Crikey, it's planned. It's going to hit the reset button, aren't
they? Veterans of Bill Cooper here.
Listen to Bill Cooper, folks. All you New Agers and all that. And Christians out there, listen to Bill Cooper. I think they're really going to press the reset button and forgive all that. All that. And I also think that they'll say, right, we raped and built the Catholic Church with the help of the finance community and all that. I've raped and pillaged throughout the ages. And by the way, we're going to give you it all back.
Yeah.
Right? Here's all your property. Here's all your flaming money back. We apologise. Blah, blah, blah. And he is then laying the ground for the new Messiah. Because this is the last book before the next Messiah comes.
Yeah.
According to all the,
the
prophecies.
That's one of my favourites. I've known that one for sort of 20, 30 years.
And this, he's laying it all out so that everybody's bloody happy. And then comes in the new Christos or whatever you want to call it. And the new Messiah for the next age, the next 2,000 years. And the way they're going to do it, because they've got the bloody technology now, they'll say, right, wipe everything clear. All the debt's gone. Right? Here's your new Messiah. But so that you can continue, we're going to get short of cash, by the way. We've got to get short of cash because money laundering has come about because cash exists.
Yeah.
Right? So, cash no longer exists. It's a Bitcoin or a digital thing. And you're going to have the mark of the beast, the mark of man, 666, and transhumanism, bang in your arm, in your head, wherever it is, and all the credits that are there will within a couple of generations disappear, and we'll be back to square one, but we'll be more enslaved than what we are now, because everything will be electronic, and they'll be able to turn you off like that.
Yeah.
And that's what I believe.
I don't find it difficult to believe that that is their intention. I definitely energetically have my suspicions that that's not the way it's going to go.
I don't think it's going to end up like that.
No, I
think people will wake up.
I think that's what their intent is. But or our intent, because it's a shared intent, we're all working on the same project, basically.
And
it does seem to me that with all of these, this kind of ever-increasing craziness amongst mankind, and it's apparent rulers, the new world management team, that there is a whole scale of other stuff going on in the solar system and in the energetic systems that support the Earth, mm-hmm. and in some other energetic systems as well. And, you know, I'm really genuinely excited about what's going on here. I was listening to, when I was at the Green Gathering, I was listening to an astrologer who is really great. Can't quite remember his name at the moment. I'll look it up before the show. But he was talking, he was very honest about astrologers and what they are and what they're doing and how it is that they can help and stuff, but not by setting things in stone for people. But he was talking about a series of like right-angled conjunctions between Uranus and Pluto that started in 2012. And he's saying that this particular one comes around quite often and involves change on a kind of planetary scale. He says what doesn't normally happen is for it to arrive seven in a row between 2012 and 2015. He says the bell struck three times. It's got four more times to ring.
Mm.
And he says, just think about it.
Revelations.
Yeah, maybe it is. One of the things he says, remember, it wasn't that long ago that bankers were regarded as respectable people who had only your best interests in mind.
That's right. Doctors, policemen,
teachers.
Yeah,
you know. And he's saying in the 70s and 80s, you know, if you're in the light entertainment industry in the 70s and 80s, then views on you have suddenly changed.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a whole load of stuff that was being swept under the carpet and we were turning a blind eye to and all of that, that we're not willing to do that anymore. And he's very excited about it. He's going, bring it on. You know, this is well uncomfortable what we've got at the moment.
I just want to say something else.
Yeah.
Just want to say something.
Yeah, one more.
We go, just one more thing. There's a lot of trust happening around. You've got UCT, the OPPT. OneHeaven.org.
Yeah.
And there's many, many different ones right now. As a researcher or a searcher, and many of you out there are probably under the same thing, you'll search all bloody day and then you'll go to bed at 8 o'clock and then you'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you'll do a bit more searching. Well, I was up a few weeks ago at 4 o'clock in the morning and bingo, I came across this. And it was called Cash Cab. It was a television programme, one of these game show crap things. And one of the questions, he's going to love this, this is going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons as far as OneHeavens.org is concerned. Now, I've never heard the word before.
I don't know OneHeaven.org.
Well, bear with me a sec.
Okay.
I've never heard this word before. Never heard this word before. And I'll come to it in a sec. One of the questions was, what is the holiday home of the Rothschilds for the in Maine, United States, where they've had their vacations for the last 200 years? What's it called? Anybody out there? Look it up on the internet, you'll not find it. The name of it is Eucadia.
Right.
I rest my case. I've put the thing out there, not any response whatsoever from the powers that be.
Eucadia.
I've never heard the word. Actually, Arcadia, it's pronounced over in the States. But they've been holding their vacations in an area outside of Maine, United States, the Rothschilds family, for the last 200 years, and it's called Arcadia. I'm saying nothing else.
Very good. Well,
I'm going to bed, see if we get an hour's kid.
That's brilliant, yeah. Well, thanks very much for your time. It's always good to talk to you, Dave. It's always a really novel experience. I'll never quite get used to it, man.
There's lots more I'd love to say, but we haven't got time.
I'll come and have a look at your talk, and I hope it's just not a string of tits and knobs as usual.
Well, it is. That's the only thing worth looking at, isn't it, tits?
Very good. Thanks a lot, Dave. See you in a minute. Yeah, have a good rest, mate.
There we go, Motorhead's version of God Save the Queen, which I thought was very fitting after all of that. We covered a lot of ground. I'm not going to look too much at the car tax stuff because I think it was pretty clear and it will be in the podcast. I did, as I say, had a look at some of these bills that he was referencing that were going through the House of Lies at the moment. nearly all private members' bills. Just one or two more choice ones. The Electoral Register Access to Public Services Bill, which is described, these things, it's pretty interesting. They give them the first readings and then they don't actually publish any of the details of them until they're very close to the second reading. Most of the second readings will be in the second half of this year, September, October, and especially November. A lot of stuff in November. I'm not sure it's going to do any of any good, in fact, but here we go. The Electoral Register Access to Public Services Bill is a bill to introduce a requirement that electoral registration be a condition of access to public services and for connected purposes, it says, which is a useful phrase they have. So, as we all know, do we not, registering on the electoral register makes you a citizen of the United Kingdom, just like having a bank account does. And it's obviously really pissing them off that there's a whole load of us not doing it. Well, it would appear that they have it in mind that if we ain't going to register, we're going to have to find our services elsewhere. The Face Coverings Prohibition Bill, a bill to prohibit the wearing of certain face coverings and for connected purposes. Local Government Miscellaneous Provisions Bill, to amend the Local Government Miscellaneous Provisions Act of 1982 to require those providing a service from a fixed pitch in a designated area to apply for a licence to trade. Well, luckily we're all in a private, eh? As he said, the Margaret Thatcher Day Bill, which means that the next August bank holiday is going to be Margaret Thatcher Day. He was right about the Office of the Deputy Prime Minister, a bill to make provision for the abolition of the Office of the Deputy Prime Minister, though slightly inaccurate. Its responsibilities are to be allocated to other departments of state, however they choose to define that. Prime Minister Replacement Bill, a bill to make provision for the appointment of a Prime Minister in the event that a Prime Minister is temporarily or permanently incapacitated. Well, I thought that was pretty much what was going on anyway. School Governing Bodies Adverse Weather Bill, a bill to require school governing bodies and head teachers to make provision to keep schools open in adverse weather conditions. Taking on some of the responsibilities of God there. Most of all, the Young Offenders Parental Responsibility Bill, a bill to make provision for the parents of young offenders to be legally responsible for their actions. That's the actions of the young people, of course, the young offenders, rather than to be responsible for their own actions. So best get ourselves some new stickers in, I guess, saying return to sender. I do not understand your intent. I have no international treaty with you, no assured value, no liability. Also, of course, none of these things are actually after you. They're after your person. But those are just a few. There's actually quite a lot more interesting stuff in there. Those are the ones that just caught my eye. And I did look at the council tax liability order stuff, the procedure in liability order applications from the Justices Clerk Society. I'm just trying to grab the link for that so I can put it in the chat box. Here we go. I do find it, like so many people do, very difficult to actually talk and deal with the keyboard at the same time. But there we go, there's the link for it. Section 5, it says on there, procedures prior to the hearing, which is the bit that Dave was referring to. The court and its staff should not give the impression that the council is in charge of the process. And we know the council is in charge of the process. We know they're hiring the courts. We know that they're issuing all the documents themselves and all that kind of stuff, and that the actual legal system, for such as it is, has very little to do with it. It also says in Section 2, under the section issuing summons, council delivers one or two complaint lists to the court with their fee or with an undertaking to pay the fee later. The list is reviewed by a legal advisor with delegated powers who issues the summonses. Either one copy of the list is returned endorsed to the council and the court retains the other list, or the court retains a single endorsed list and the council is informed of the outcome. And then it says in brackets, in reality, it is extremely unlikely that any summons will not be issued So this does not need to be a detailed notification. So clearly there's a lot of due diligence being done there. And then the council, it says, print out the summonses, pre-printed with the justice's clerk's signature, and post them out. So we ask ourselves the question, are the orders in correct form, given that they carry no wet signature? Well, under section 4, which says orders, the council's software generates the liability orders. These may be rubber stamped or pre-printed with the justice's clerk's signature. There is no requirement for a wet signature. Well, enough said, I think. I thought another interesting thing that Dave said was that maxim in law which says that he does not have, cannot give. So as well as our labels and our knowledge that it is not we the people that they're after, strictly speaking, but simply the corporations that were created on our birth, that's another important one to remember. He who does not have, cannot give, which may well mean that this business of actually having your stuff held in a trust for future generations, which means that you really don't have anything. It's a kind of hair-splitting exercise, really, because none of us, it would appear, has title to anything. You can only really borrow it. May also be a useful thing. Thanks to Dave, of course, for all of that. He's got a lot more stuff going on as well, but that's just what he chose to talk to us about.
This is Media Streaming International Radio.
I remember the moment shit stopped being funny when I ran out of luck, love, pride, and money. And my shoe got a hole and my shirt lost a stitch. And my mom said, now you ain't nothing but a bum. So. So I did what a bum does best, rubbed a couple of cans and a war-torn vest. And I rolled down the gold just to sign away my soul. But the race still simmered and my mom was not forgiven, dog. Don't you hate it when people say, hey, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, hey, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say. Now, first things first, time to get a real job. Follow your pride and work from 9 to 5. Well, Dolly P said, no way to make a living, but it sure be standing on a street corner singing. Boss and he's a bona fide power test. So boy, you wanna climb the ladder? Well, work hard, you can be a great manager. Let's get straight to the part where I'm bouncing. You can sit back, relax, and get ready. You're about to meet a little ready. You play your cards right, you'll get him going steady. Don't you hate it when people say, hey, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, hey, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say. Kids, two dogs and a minivan. And it don't mean shit that he had the subject just to get all this, cause everybody says it was worth it, you just gotta work it. And after all, boss, nobody's perfect. Still something troubling, bubbling deep in the pit of his stomach, but he realized that doesn't matter what suit you wear or what job you do when life's a boxer. Don't you hate it when people say, hey, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, hey, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, that's fucking life. Don't you hate it when people say, when people say.
Yay, the fabulous Dexter Dextrous and his Fingersmiths there, and that's Life from their All Talk EP.